Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. It's a bit of a shaky day for me, and before we get to the usual thing, I've got something to say. It's if you're listening to this post recorded, it's December 16th, 2012. We've had a very big tragedy in this country, and most of you probably know about this on Friday morning. I don't really want to go into the details of it because it has a personal edge to me. There's not a lot of stuff we know. We know what happened. We know that 20 children are dead. We know very little else. The thing is, it's personal for me because I know you know Becky. She's been on the show, but she's not here on the show. She's an educator, and I know her character, and I know the kind of person she is, and I think I know what she would do in the clutch, and that frightens me. That frightens me on a level that I am not often frightened. And so it's been a rough day for me, and a rough couple days for me, as you might imagine, as it's been for a lot of people, and certainly those people in Connecticut are feeling something that I just cannot comprehend. And bear with me today, because we're going to talk about this. And I'm going to say one thing about the event itself and the kind of discussions that are going on right now. This is all I'm going to say about that specifically, is what I'm noticing on Facebook and social media and comments and stuff like that, is everybody is taking this event to as basically confirmation bias. Pro-gun, anti-gun, pro-education, anti-education, pro-healthcare, anti-healthcare, whatever it is, everybody seems so comfortable with their political ideologies. Everybody seems so insisted in their ideas and so insistent that their ways are right. I don't know about you guys, but for me, this was a challenge to me. I had to sit back, I had to take a couple days, and I had to think about this. And I really advise you, if you are of a political bent, to really, really let this challenge your beliefs. Even if you think especially if you're pro-gun, or anti-gun, just think about this. Put it together. Make sure your heart and your mind are together and in the right place and are backed by evidence. Again, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. With me today, as usual, is Mike. How are you?
I could be better.
Yeah, yeah. And Bob, welcome back to the show.
How's it going?
Better now. there's something about the doing the process of the show that really kind of puts my brain sort of humming along and things like that. And that's always nice.
It's a catharsis.
It is a catharsis. Now, obviously, the response to this event, as you might imagine, is enormous and is in many places ridiculous. And that's what we're going to talk about for the first 20 minutes of the show. There have been religious people all over the place saying things like Mike Huckabee wrote, "When we ask why there's violence in their schools, but we've systematically removed God from our schools, should we be so surprised that schools have become a place of carnage?" Brian Fisher of the AFA said basically the same thing. Eric Hovind said basically the same thing. 80 million people on Facebook have basically said the same thing. I'm going to make a point about this, and then I'm going to open it up for discussion. But this is my take on this. This is the nadir of bigotry. This is bullying at its finest. This is the powerful speaking to the small. It's terrible. It's horrible. This is everything that is wrong with religion. And let me tell you, if you think you're going to defend religion today, I'm on a bit of a warpath. 253-584-1480. But you know what? You know who should be leading the charge on this and saying how terrible this is? Not atheists, because this process, this thing that they're doing, is exactly how atheists are made. It's people who think they are smug, who think they are comfortable, who think they are powerful, and they're saying, oh yeah, if you all did what I said, nobody would ever die, it would be perfect. This is how they learn to control you. And if we stand up and we're the guys leading the charge, there's gonna be a bunch of ridiculous people white knighting these guys saying, well, they have a right to say it too. Let the other, because you know where people are going to find out how terrible these people are? They're not going to Friendly Atheists. They're not going to Ask an Atheist. They're going to CNN. They're going to MSNBC. They're going to Fox. They're all saying how terrible these things are. I imagine you guys have sort of a different take on this, though.
I wouldn't say I have a different take. I do think it's important for us to say something about it, because often we're the first people to say something about it. It may be first picking up someone like the Friendly Atheist, and it makes its way to something like Media Matters. But it seems like, I guess I'm angry for a different reason, Sam. I mean, I look at this and say, I wish I could be shocked by the horrible things they say, but at this point I'm not. I'm not shocked at all. What I'm in is shocked that they still have a microphone at the end of saying it two times ago.
Yeah.
Not having a microphone in the sense that I want somebody to legally take it away from them. That's not what I'm asking. What I'm saying is that you have a microphone in this country, generally as long as there's someone willing to listen to the sounds coming out of the other end of that microphone. And these guys still have an audience. I look at somebody like, say, Mike Huckabee. He's going to get a negative blip on his radar. He's going to still have websites like Media Matters saying, wow, what a horrible thing Mike Huckabee said. But he's still going to have the same radio show sponsors that he did next week that he has now.
Yeah.
He's not going to have a Max Exodus of money to his radio show. And he's still going to appear on Fox News on a regular basis, because they're going to treat it as if the things that this former governor of Arkansas has to say are important. I'd say the same thing of Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson is the all-time champion of saying hurtful, horrible things in moments of tragedy.
But
and he's still going to sit on millions of dollars, and we're still going to have millions of people giving him donations every day.
One of the things that you said when we were talking about this, which really kind of put it into perspective for me, not because I agreed with you, but because I disagreed with you, is you said you really, the thing is that these people, the people who are giving them money, the people who are giving them power, the people funding them, the people paying for this bigotry and terrible and this terror, are the people who agree with them. They're not the people we're trying to convince. To convince that we're okay. They'll never believe that. These people are the problem. They are being paid by the problem. And you said, I really wish people were better than that.
I do.
And I think on this week, with what caused this to happen, I'm having, even as a humanist, this is a trying time for me. I'm finding it very difficult to believe that people are often that good. Now, you go to their places of power. You go into their halls of justice and tell them how terrible... I did the comic book reference. And tell them how terrible they are. What's your take on this?
Well, I actually do have a small group, a church small group that I go to, and I haven't been since the events. So I'll be curious to see what they say about this, the where was God kind of thing. Actually, Sam, I do like your point. Just let them hang themselves. Let them let these nutty pundits have enough rope to hang themselves, as opposed to us always being the scold.
Yeah.
In this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're good at it, but there's a price for being good at it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and again, there's this. I guess I have outrage fatigue when it comes to statements like this.
Okay, I like that.
I just get tired, and it feels like another weight being thrown on the back of the wagon. And I see, I mean, we're looking at this. A couple of, 10 years ago, Jerry Falwell blamed 9/11 on feminists, legal abortion, and gay people.
Yeah.
Pat Robertson blamed the Haiti earthquake on a pact with Satan. This is not new. These guys are going to continue to say the most hurtful, insensitive things, saying that the victims on some level are responsible for their own fate, and that instead of actually outpouring of compassion, we should instead get angry at the people that they get angry with on a regular basis.
I sort of wonder if it's the Carney effect, and I wanted to throw this at you, is these are people that you know, despite the multi-million dollars, the enormous media empires that we will never be able to chip away with as long as we're just one show, as long as they have these things, I mean, they have a privilege that we do not. But let's be honest, their listenership, their viewership is dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
Their support is shrinking in the main, not just among people like us. I mean, the religious nuns are growing. And this is all signs that these people are becoming less and less relevant. Are they saying these things as sort of a Carney effect? Are they saying them because they know They're going to say something ridiculous, and then people are going to watch their show for a few weeks and chuck ridiculous things at them and go, look at the stupid guy.
I wish I could believe it was that cynical. With Pat Robertson, I think he let's look at Pat for a bit, because Pat Robertson is the champion of this. He probably has more consecutive horrible responses than probably anybody on their list.
Right.
He is clearly, like you said, his viewership is dwindling. It's small compared to what it was in the 80s. He's not the powerhouse that he was. He's not going to run for president again. He's not going to be treated as seriously. And even among a lot of evangelicals, he's seen as somewhat of a joke. But even at his lowest point, he has millions of supporters.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me. And it makes me wonder, is there ever a point that somebody can ever say something so awful, so insensitive, so ludicrous that they can be completely discredited? And I don't even believe they can anymore.
Michael.
What about Rush Limbaugh? Didn't he take a beating with his advertisers? A year ago or so.
At a fraction, and no surprise, I follow the radio industry. He's at a fraction of his listeners. He has a fraction of his the people giving him money, the people buying advertising.
Right.
He's still making a very tidy living doing what he does.
Right. So it's
hundreds, if not thousands, of radio stations.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hundreds now, but it's actually still carried by Fox. Never mind.
I'd be happy if our show was on as many radio stations as his.
Oh,
at a low point.
Any third tier talk guy, we would happily trade one. It's the way it is.
But I think if you look at Rush Limbaugh, at Glenn Beck, at perhaps Pat Robertson, I think there's an ebb and flow.
Glenn Beck is a good because that guy had hundreds of millions of listeners, and now. It's tiny, and he's like going out to Jerusalem to declare himself God or something. And he's going absolutely insane. And I think the way people really, really get removed from the population, as I used to say, I was about to say Michael Richards. Michael Richards is a good example of that, because he said he did something really ridiculous and really racist, and you never hear about the guy anymore. However, Pat Robertson has done that, hasn't he?
Yes, several times, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If you want a good example, just Google Pat Robertson mac and cheese.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy he on a regular basis. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, getting back to Rush Limbaugh, has said how many really, truly egregious racist things on the radio.
But that is his stock in trade, though. That is, I think I may be showing a little bit of my political hand, but that's how he makes money.
Oh, yeah, I don't get that. There's definitely a strong xenophobic vibe in this country that basically these people are paranoid and believe that, oh my God, everything, white people had everything handed to them in a privileged stance, and other people having equal status to us is a threat to us.
Yeah.
That's nothing new. That's a privilege argument that we've made about Christianity before. I guess what I wonder about is that I'd like to think that we've come a long way since the 1980s on those sorts of discussions, that nowadays something that Rush Limbaugh would have said without comment in the 80s will create an exodus of advertisers now. But with Pat Robertson, he's not backed by advertisers. He's backed by supporters.
Yeah.
There's clearly enough to still pay for the Trinity Broadcast Network 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Let alone the 700 Club.
Well, let's keep it at religion. That's the thing is he's directly supported, and he's a church, and there are people who believe in his ministry. There's a lot. I've met people who've said, yeah, he occasionally says something stupid, but the main point of what he believes is so nice. And then, you know, you take a closer look and like, no.
If you have someone like Peter Popov, who was publicly humiliated, and he bounces back and he still finds listenership.
Absolutely.
Some of these guys are just Teflon.
Peter Popoff was completely destroyed, too. I mean, he was a faith healer who James Randi actually went in there. What did he use? What kind of device? But he actually...
A radio.
Yeah.
He actually picked up the transmission that he was getting in his earpiece that he was actually putting out there to this audience, as if he was getting these divine revelations from God about
people's
diseases.
Go to the lady on your left in the blue dress. She has MS or something. And so he says, Madam, I understand you have MS, or God's telling me. And
it's nice to think that as of this moment right now, we are as effective a faith healer as Peter Popoff. We use the same technology in the same way.
It it wonders me, because you get back to the sort of a Pac-Man, is that you play the game Pac-Man, there's like five ghosts, and you play the little yellow guy that eats them. And when you eat them, their little eyes run back to that little box in the center, and they get a whole new body, and it feels like this is the career of people like this, that the best we can hope for is that they lose their body for about 10 years at most, like Peter Popoff. And then he comes back, and it's like nobody wants to recognize the fact that this guy has been completely discredited.
Well, or the Matrix, you know, you kill Mr. Smith, and he comes back seconds later in someone else's body.
Tabloid news programs, like the one where Bill O'Reilly got his start, that did a thing on Peter Popoff when he started hitting back prominence, and they were actually chasing him from his multi, and they were very clear to mention the prices. They were chasing him from his $4 million building to his $200,000 Porsche. Like, hey, and he's literally, it's such a trope in media, the corrupt religious person or the corrupt politician running away from the press and hiding in their car. That is exactly what Peter Popoff did. He doesn't have the same fame he did in the 80s, but he's still, again, making a tidy living, being terrible to people.
And as opposed to being in jail, where he might arguably should be, given that he's fleeced people.
And But to bring it, it's these three guys that we're highlighting. Mike Huckabee, who is just a thoroughly terrible human being.
Former governor.
Yeah, former governor doesn't, sometimes people say being a governor means you deserve respect. Mike Huckabee does not deserve this respect. And he clearly, to be honest with you, for most people in America, you make a point that he has a show. However, I don't think it's a primetime show. Doesn't have a lot of listeners. He goes on The Daily Show basically to be Jon Stewart's punching bag. And that's his life.
Well, his radio show doesn't have the view listenership that Rush Limbaugh does, but he's in direct competition to him, and he does have supporters. I mean, he's still viewed as the less objectionable alternative to Rush.
I think that's changing. I think this might change that.
I hope so. I mean, Brian Fisher, I mean, his is probably the most egregious statement of anyone. The usual, these kids got killed because God wasn't allowed to be forced on them through a public school system.
Yeah.
That line is there, but he actually said, a God is not going where he's not wanted. We kicked prayer out of school, so I'm sorry. It's God's suddenly a vampire now. He can't come into a room until he's invited. I mean, it's just like, well, there you go.
But it gets worse, Mike. There's that pastor guy on Twitter who I don't have his name right now, but who was like, the 20 children murdered in Connecticut received a Christmas gift. They get to have dinner with Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, you unmitigated bastard. A child is taken away from a family, and you're using this as a teachable moment about Jesus?
And Andrea Yates is a saint for drowning her children.
Yeah.
And so on and so on.
Yeah. If that's really how it is, why are you not for voluntary human extinction? Why even bother living? Have society? They're not.
Well, if you look at the Book of Revelation and they're championing,
if you read it, it's not voluntary.
Well, it's about as voluntary as getting set on fire
as they think they live. It's not human extinction. It's kill all the people we don't like.
We're moving them to a different place. I get that.
Yeah.
That's a part that just really gets me in this, is that this is a mainstream belief. That preacher on Twitter is saying a mainstream idea that you're in a wonderful place now, and that I can completely disregard this horrible thing because, oh, by the way, my religious beliefs say you're in happy land
now. I have a couple questions for you on this when we come back from the break. But really, again, if you're into politics and if you're an activist, please take this moment to revisit your beliefs and make sure they're backed by evidence and that they're sound, and that you're just not using confirmation bias. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
The perfect Mormon wife in the perfect Mormon town has a secret. She doesn't believe in God. Her husband has a secret too. He's in love with another man. She's stood by her husband for 2 years, but when she meets a man who calls himself X, an artist traveling through the western states, her resolve to be the perfect wife finally crumbles. Baptism for the Dead, a novel by Libby Hawker, explores one woman's loss of faith in modern-day America. Get your copy today from your favorite ebook retailer. Paperback edition coming soon.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we're having a day here at the show.
Oh, are we?
Oh yeah, it's been a thing. However, we're going to have fun now and after the show. Join us at the 2100 building at 2100 24th Avenue South in Seattle at 5 p.m. for the Humanist of Washington and Seattle Atheist Solstice Potluck. Bring a dish, bring a friend, bring some conversation. Drinks and beverages will be provided. We're not doing a post show this week. This is where we're going. It's one of the big events of the year, and it's really, there's always a lot of new folks at these events, and this is where I think a lot of people in the community get to introduce themselves, and I have a fun time doing it. So, and this time there's going to be a lot of music. It's going to be a very artful event. Now, going back to our discussion in the previous segment, Mike, I said I think what we need to do is, as an atheist movement, as much as we can tell anybody what to do. You know, I'm freely admitting that my ability to control the atheist movement in any way, and my desire to control the atheist movement in any way, is zero. But I think we should let the secular, the completely uninterested parties who just see this as a lesson in hate, lead the charge on this one. And I think would you do the same, or would you do differently?
I think it's important to have our voice in that conversation, because those other voices oftentimes leave out the elephant in the room, which is that the things that they're saying are actually very consistent with their religious beliefs, mainstream religious beliefs, and I worry that leaving that out, we get the same sort of what we refer to ourselves as NPR ecumenicalism, which is that, oh, this isn't religion, this is something else, this is political ideology, this is money. I mean, it's those things too, but there's a lot of hand-wringing that I don't want to be there, that oftentimes we're not there to keep Pat Robertson in check. We're there to keep everyone else sort of in check in these sorts of discussions.
On the other hand, to extend your metaphor, the elephant in the room, the reason we use the phrase elephant in the room is because everybody knows it's there. It's the unsaid subject. And I think there's a psychological advantage in situations like these to leave it unsaid, because then you get people saying that we're making political hay out of it. And in my case, that's not what it is. We are at the heart of why I'm an anti-theist right here. This is it. This is why I'm not just a humanist and not just an atheist, but why I think religion is a poisonous force.
Harmful. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great point. You know, one thing about this that I want to get back to, just the whole question of God in the school and that sort of thing. Why is it that the atheist has to inform the Christians about what omniscient means?
Yeah.
Omnipotent. If God wants to be in the school, it's not like we can keep him out even if we wanted to.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. And those T-shirts they're printing up about with the letter from the concerned student to God, I want one. Just saying. I want one. So let's shift gears here, and let's start talking about how religion, how the Bible and how Christianity, how it might be modified. Because there's people who think that the best way to fix religion is to basically work on the exhaust while the car is running, and that's what's going on here. There is a Christian group supportive of gay rights is printing what they call a gay Bible titled the Queen James Bible.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's got a rainbow cross on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
There was a feminist Bible, I think, some years ago, and so I guess this is a...
Good luck with that.
Oh, boy. They claim to be correcting what they claim to be misinterpretations made by Christians who have used their faith as their motivation to oppose gay rights. On its Amazon page, it lists the author as God, and Jesus Christ is the contributor.
Oh, wow.
What? That's all you're going to change? You're going to remove that one thing that talks about man lying with man, but leave all the torture and the rape and the slavery?
The only way to remediate the Bible, I think, in that case, is commentary. I mean, you need a midrash or something.
Right.
From a gay standpoint, that's going to work. That would help you to some extent. But the Bible itself,
it's funny because the argument they make is that the word homosexuality, explicitly the word homosexuality, was not included until 1947.
Right.
That's true, but it still said for thousands of years, if a man has sex with a man, you kill him with rocks.
Yeah, that's
and
what it says.
That's pretty homophobic, even if it doesn't explicitly say homosexuality. And I want to first say, more than anything else, that I'm glad that these people are doing this on one level.
Yeah.
And it's because it clearly there is a change in attitudes about homosexuality among Christians. That's a good thing.
What do we say?
People are better than their holy books.
Exactly.
So I'm glad that that's happening.
Yeah.
Clearly the social justice marches on and religion is a couple steps behind, and this is them kind of catching up. However, I think that there's a real danger every single time religion catches up to social change, which is that they whitewash the past.
Yeah.
That you have, like, for instance, slavery. There is not a Christian that you'll have to hunt really hard to find a pro-slavery sermon around the country now.
Right.
Go into any churches. However, just because most Christians are not pro-slavery doesn't mean the Bible isn't. And the Bible is explicitly pro-slavery, tells slaves to accept their servitude, and for the 90% of Christianity's existence, that was the standard among Christians. Until about the 1880s, and then it was like the Unitarians and the Quakers were anti-slavery, they were the prohibitionists, but they were the fringe for such a long time, and we shouldn't pretend that every Christian ever completely misinterpreted these almost impossible to misinterpret lines.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with homophobia now.
What you'll find today and what I've seen a bunch of times is what they'll say is it was like indentured servitude and not like for life slavery. And yet the Bible is exactly like what we had.
Yeah.
If it's someone like you, if it's a Jew, it's indentured servitude, just like Europeans would have indentured servitude with Europeans in the early colonial period. And then if it's from some other tribe, hey, slavery for life.
Yeah.
They pass on to your children.
Those Bible passages that say it's indentured servitude, that they interpret as indentured servitude, happened to be the same Bible passages that were interpreted by slave owners to mean slavery for life is a good thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
But it's very clear. Slavery for life for the people who are not part of your tribe, A-okay, in the Bible.
I think we should encourage the people who are writing, encourage the people who are writing the gay Bible. It's a darn sight better than the Conservapedia Bible. However, I think while they're investing time in looking at the morality of the Bible, that we might suggest that they look at other places. Now, for every door that opens, there is a door that closes.
Sometimes several.
Or perhaps another door that opens that happens to be the door at the bottom of a guillotine. The revised Kill the Gays bill is back, and the Pope has blessed the author. Uganda's legislature is reintroducing the infamous Kill the Gays bill that previously drew international condemnation. Though it was originally intended to still include the death penalty for homosexuality, that provision, fortunately, has been dropped last month. How kind they are. The bill will still offer a sentence of 14 years in prison for those convicted convicted of being a homosexual and even threatens prosecution of media organizations, NGOs, and individuals who support gay rights or refuse to turn in gays to the authorities. Even worse, it gets worse, people. Rebecca Kadaga, the speaker for the Ugandan legislature, who promised to pass the bill as a Christmas present to Uganda, has just been blessed by the Pope at a mass attended by thousands on Wednesday. And if I remember right, the bill was part of it. It wasn't just a general blessing. It's her work about this, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. She's using this, of course, the appearance with... This is the same thing that Mother Teresa did, too, which is when you appear in the pictures with horrible people, you give them moral weight to the horrible things that they do, because guess what's going to appear in their propaganda?
Yeah.
Yeah, that. That's exactly what's going to happen. See, look how great the dear leader is now that he has a picture next to Mother Teresa or the Pope or whoever. And the fact... I'm not going to say, oh, well, the Pope didn't know. He blesses a lot of people. Well, you know what? He's got a powerful organization that's really good at finding all sorts of things. And I have a real problem thinking that the head of a national legislature made it in there and apparently just crashed the party and he didn't know. He freaking knew.
Of course he knew.
And he didn't care. Are we still going to pretend the Pope?
Oh, no. He cared. He cared. He likes it. And that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, exactly, and the Pope also criticizes things that he doesn't like.
Yeah,
and if this was in that category, he would use his platform to do exactly that.
I don't often ask Catholics to answer for their ridiculous clergy because I think that's unfair. I mean, your clergy has its own country and lives in its little.
It's not really your fault for the parishioners, for the lay people.
Yeah, it lives in its little bastard rodeo over there in Italy. But. I want to ask you there. How do you look at this? How do you look at how do you look at your Pope blessing somebody who tried to pass a bill to kill gay people and say that, yes, this is the religion for me. This is what I want to be a part of.
He is infallible, Sam. So, I mean, you got to take that into account.
There are times I try to be understanding. I try to go, I understand this is how you were raised and this is important to you and this is your culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then the guy at the head of your little Boy Scout troop says, hey, I'm going to bless this person who wants to kill all the gays.
The Pope works in strange ways.
I don't get it.
I would use a different word to strange.
This is where I don't have a connection to these people anymore. I don't know how occasionally I say something insensitive. Occasionally I make a mistake. I feel terrible about it.
And you apologize.
And I apologize when I can, when people will let me.
Not 600 years later.
And then this guy says, she wrote a bill that's going to execute gay people. Let's have her over for a drink. Yeah, this is, what? I don't get it.
The Pope just made it easier to pass that bill now.
Yeah.
That's another thing, is that there's going to be legislators who are on the fence, and they go, oh, well, the Pope says it's okay. Because you know what? Religious leaders, including both the Catholic Church and American evangelicals, have been forcing this culture war on Uganda for decades now.
Yeah.
This is the fruit of that work. And, oh, by the way, speaking of the Pope's infallibility, did you hear this? The Pope has a Twitter account now.
Yeah.
And one of his, I guess, goons or henchmen or Pope bots or whatever they're called went out and said ahead of time that the Pope is infallible because I guess he must have seen what had happened when Chris Brown was on Twitter, and he's like, whoa, I don't want that blowback.
So do you remember when the first time, I think it was the last Pope, the slightly less crappy Pope.
John Paul II.
Yeah, when he sent his first email encyclical. Do you remember when he did that? It was this big event. He did it in front of a bunch of people. It was like, he sent an email encyclical, and they had his it was Pope John Paul. So he wasn't doing very good. So he's kind of leaning over in his chair, drooling a little bit.
Someone was guiding his fingers.
Yeah, like those assisted communications guys, and he's writing this thing, and there's this graphic next to him of a letter being folded up and flying away into the clouds, going to Sao Paulo and to Baltimore and everybody's receiving the encyclical over the power of the internet.
It's a miracle.
Oh, yeah. The only thing that I saw that and I laughed. And then I saw the laptop he was using. It was the same model laptop I had, except the Dell logo had been replaced with a little Vatican logo. And I'm like, crap, where do I get one of those?
Probably
gonna be
China.
Infallible, too.
Yeah. Well,
clearly the Vatican does not care about copyright law.
That is the closest I will ever get to having a Pope mobile.
With bulletproof glass.
Sam, if you will it is no dream.
That's true. 3D printers are cheap these days. So continuing our theme of death. Oh, jeez. So it's been going around these days. There are still countries out there, continuing our little blasphemy discussion, where you can be killed just for being an atheist. A new report from the International Humanist and Ethical Union names 7 countries in which atheists can be executed for their beliefs. Okay, here's a surprise, or here's a list. Let's see if we're surprised by any of them. Afghanistan, Iran, the Maldives, Mauritania, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Sudan. It's pretty much what you'd expect, right?
Maldives. I didn't realize that.
The Maldives, I actually, when I did my blasphemy talk last week, I spent a lot of time talking about the Maldives.
Really?
If you are a citizen of that country, you are a Muslim.
By definition.
Period.
Or else.
Yeah, or else. They've systematically destroyed any pre-Muslim culture or artifacts.
I'm going to strike that from my vacation list.
Yeah, don't hang out there. These laws relate to apostasy, blasphemy, compulsory religious registration, religious tests for citizenship or participation in civic life, and religious control of family law and public education. In addition, the publication of atheist views is banned or strictly limited in Bangladesh, Egypt, Indonesia, Kuwait, or Jordan. Also mentioned in the report is the United States record on anti-atheist legislation. 7 states... and you might be surprised by some of these: Arkansas, Maryland, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas have constitutional provisions banning atheists from holding public office.
Yeah, they're not actually enforceable because of the Supreme Court decision in, I believe, 1961.
Yeah.
However, any attempt to actually remove this language, it goes down in flames right away. There was a legislator who got elected in Arkansas in 2005, and one of his first actions was to just simply rectify the language of the Arkansas State Constitution to take out the language that is unenforceable and had been for 40 years.
Yeah.
He couldn't even get it out of committee. So even though the law isn't there, the mentality that created that law in the first place is still going strong.
Yeah, and let's not forget Herb Silverman.
Oh, exactly.
Who's currently, I guess, in a sort of race to become the next senator there? Or?
Well, it's a race where one of the guys has a skateboard with rocket ships on it,
right,
and he's on foot.
So Maryland surprises me.
A little bit. It does, yeah. I thought, Mike, that South Carolina was another state that might have had a recent attempt at rectifying their constitutional challenge, but...
Yeah.
It's amazing. Even if you just want to make a symbolic statement, let's just get straight with the 21st century. Doesn't work.
Absolutely. Amazing. And that blasphemy talk I did in Olympia, we're actually trying to get that on the air. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So the good news keeps on coming, and I mean that in the most sarcastic way possible, but in a moment of science.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So what does everybody want to play? Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shapeshifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. Now let's switch from our heavy and difficult fare of this terrible tragedies going around the country, and talk about something a little bit nicer and friendlier, like the end of all existence. Take it away, Dan.
Hi, this is a moment of science. This week, I want to talk to you about the supposed Mayan apocalypse, December 21st, 2012. The internet is buzzing with apocalypse memes, and even some of the news stations have picked up the story. Some people claim that the Mayan calendar predicts doom, but who were the Mayans? How does their calendar work, and should we really worry about this? Well, the Mayans were an advanced civilization that inhabited Central America from about 250 to 900 AD in their peak of power. They had very advanced written, mathematical, architectural, and astronomical skills for their time. But they aren't gone. There are still a large number of Mayan descendants living in Central America today. So what's with their calendar? Well, the ancient Mayans counted in base 20, although 13 was also a culturally relevant number. So by their method of counting, 360 days equaled 1 tun, which is about 1 year. 20 tun is 1 katun, or about 2 decades. 20 katun equals 1 baktun, about 400 years. And 13 baktun comes out to approximately 5,125.6 years. Now, the Mayan calendar that everyone's talking about is actually a combination of two of their older calendars, the Tzolk'in, which was a 260-day calendar, and the Hab, a 365-day calendar. This combined Mayan calendar relies on cycles of both 20 and 13, and if they decided to go with 13 baktun rather than 20, then starting from the zero point of their calendar, which is calculated to be 3114 BC, that makes the end point December 21st, 2012. So what could happen? Well, the author of three 2012 apocalypse books, Jason Rand, says that Planet X, which is actually a small brown dwarf star, will pass close to Earth and cause catastrophes with its gravity. According to Mr. Rand, he got this important news when he was abducted by aliens from the planet Epsilon, and oh, by the way, he wants $1 billion to fund a survival effort. Now, there are certainly brown dwarf stars out there in our universe, but they're nowhere near Earth. The nearest is about 12 light years away, and we would have literally hundreds of thousands of years of notice if even the closest ones started heading this way. What else? Author Patrick Jarrell says that there will be huge solar flares that destroy all of our technology and carry enough south-charged particles to cause the Earth to flip on its rotational axis. But we've already endured Class X solar flares, which are as big as they come. We had one February 14th of last year that was the largest seen in the last 4 years, but no one other than astronomers even noticed. In fact, the largest solar flare ever recorded occurred in 1859, and yet, here we are. Our planet's atmosphere and magnetosphere do an excellent job of protecting us from these fairly common events. What else? Well, some astrologists and New Agers are saying that the sun at winter solstice will be in line with the plane of the Milky Way, causing earthquakes, tsunamis, and other disasters. But now here's the rub. Because our Earth's axis is tilted relative to the plane of our orbit, the sun's travel through our sky seems tilted as well. This tilted plane that the sun seems to travel is called its ecliptic. Now, the sun's ecliptic, and concordantly, the position of the sun at winter solstice relative to other stars in our galaxy, makes one full rotation around us every 26,000 years. So that's 360 degrees divided by 26,000 years, or approximately 0.013 degrees per year. Now, that being said, the plane of the Milky Way is 10 to 20 degrees wide, meaning that the sun in its winter solstice will be in the plane of the Milky Way for anywhere from 700 to 1400 years. Either way, the sun crosses the plane of the Milky Way relative to our orbit twice a year, every year, with no ill effects on us. So what can we expect? Well, why should the Mayan calendar be any different from our own? When our calendar reaches December 31st every year, does the world end? Of course not. We just flip it back over to January 1st, so we can expect December 22nd to occur on schedule. But some people are going to go a little crazy, so if someone on your holiday shopping list is asking for propane, ammunition, or canned food, you may want to shop early to beat the rush. I'm Dan Lombardo, and I hope you enjoyed this moment of science.
Thanks a bunch, Dan, for that oddly Tolkien-esque moment of science with all those weird fantasy-sounding words, which I imagine might be some of the source material for.
I'm going to have to change my Christmas plans and plan to pay those credit cards, I guess.
Yeah, could Phil make the solstice dinner tonight, though, so my plans are good. So, continuing the good news, we do have an update. We wrote a blog post about this. Albert Saber, the man at the head of the Facebook group and organization Egyptian Atheists, has been convicted. The 27-year-old computer science graduate and online atheist activist has been convicted on blasphemy charges in Egypt. On Wednesday, he was sentenced in Cairo to court. In a Cairo court to 3 years in prison for Facebook posts where he promoted atheism, insulting Islam and Christianity, and criticizing religious belief. Saber will be allowed to appeal the ruling after paying a bail of 1,000 Egyptian pounds, equivalent to 160 American bucks.
Yeah, he actually already paid it, and they're stalling on letting him out.
Of course.
They're finding all sorts of excuses, it turns out.
Yeah.
Well, as much as we complain about the Christian intrusion into politics and so on in this country, it sounds a lot better than what we have in Egypt, so that's nice.
Yeah, that is true.
And it's getting worse there, too. We have a new Islamist president there who's pushing a constitution that was only pushed by Islamists.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the members of the Muslim Brotherhood political party, not government officials, going out and beating up protesters, screaming religious slogans. So this is not a good place for him to have his trial.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of the rule of law, as I think both of you guys know. But this is one of those times where I think get him bail and get him the heck out of there, because he's not going to be served by any sort of justice.
And Christians often point out, hey, you whine about atheists being injured and so on. Well, Christians are injured all the time.
Yeah.
That drives us crazy too. We want religious freedom. We want freedom of speech.
You know, that's true. And I actually talked about that in the blasphemy talk. Is that there are blasphemy laws in the world being used against Christians. And as someone who believes that blasphemy is law, blasphemy laws are terrible no matter who is blaspheming.
We support those Christians just like we support the atheists.
Yeah,
who are hurt by the same laws.
It does fall apart when they say because they're being persecuted over there, that means they're being persecuted over here. And that's a common that's a common trope, I have to admit. Like I said, I'm not feeling a lot of sensitivity for religious folks today after what I've been reading.
And maybe someday we'll even get a Christian president.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, wow.
Maybe.
Maybe Christian.
Maybe 43 in succession. Wouldn't that be a beautiful day?
That's just a statistical anomaly.
I'm getting
silly. Yeah, come on. So, well, you know, when that happens in the United States, when there is a Christian president, you can imagine it'll be posted on Iranian YouTube. Have you guys heard about this?
Oh, my.
The Islamic Republic of Iran now has their own heavily monitored and censored state-controlled version of YouTube. According to state media, the new video sharing site called Mehr will promote Islamic and Iranian culture. I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but whatever. It's crap. Western websites like YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter are blocked by the Iranian government, who claim that the sites are waging a soft war against them. Iran is currently trying to create their own censored version of the internet, though few people believe they can fully keep the internet out. So I went to this site. I did. I managed to get in, and I managed to watch 3 seconds of a video before I got cut out. And it was the video on the big video on the front page of their website, and it was about sheep agriculture.
And that crossed the line.
Yeah, that's just too weird for
me. Iran is an educated country. It's a tech-savvy country.
It is.
So how many people are actually using this website, and how many people have already figured out how to hack around it?
Well, I mean, there's no hacking around it. You just don't go there. Or what I might do is subvert it. Like, a lot of people use proxies to get out of Iran and to get, like, you know, Tor proxies or VPN services to get actual internet access. It's endemic. You find it everywhere. A friend of the show was in China, and to get on her website, she just got a VPN account and there was no trouble.
But she's also an American citizen, though.
But she's also an American citizen. But in the cities, it's a little different. It's a very, I don't really understand what's going on. However, I would like the inverse of that. I would like access to the private internet of Iran and North Korea, although I couldn't really read North Korea.
I think the North Korean internet is an abacus.
No, they have one. They have one. They have their own version of Red Hat Linux, called Red Star Linux, and it goes on the North Korean internet, which is about as fantastic as it sounds. And
I just have to wonder that the only pages in North Korea are basically just an animated GIF of Kim Jong-un riding a unicorn with like a background that looks like it's from a Trapper Keeper in the 90s or the Future City.
Well, continue. continuing my cavalcade of creepy interests here, I actually have a copy of Red Star Linux. Because it's open source software. It's fully legal for me to download it. And it was on a Netflix site.
Are you saying the communist country has a publicly owned internet?
Yeah, I understand. Open source is communism. Thank you.
As long as they have Honey Badger videos on in North Korea, that's all I care about.
And it's funny because I have a little fortune program, and guess who all the quotes are of?
Oh, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Dear
leader, great leader, whatever. I would love the chance to possibly be arrested by the Iranian government and get into that internet and start posting some Christopher Hitchens videos or something like that. I have to admit, that's the dream I have after I have a couple drinks. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And so that's the news of the week. Let's do an email. Hello. This is Rachel from Seattle, and she writes, "Hello, I am an atheist. All my family and friends are still Christians who attend church quite regularly. My family is very liberal, and my dad is very into science, and at one time was a certified science teacher. I've never talked about faith or my atheism with my father, but I know he likely doesn't believe a lot of what he thinks he does or should. With the holidays coming up, I was wondering if any of you had any ideas for books I could get him. Nothing overtly atheist, but perhaps something that calls on science and might set the questioning wheels in motion."
Well, there's two different kinds of Christians that like science, and they're very different. One of them is in the mode of Ken Miller, the other one is in the mode of Kent Hovind. You should probably know which kind your dad is by now.
The War of the Kents.
So I would say, first of all, Rachel, don't buy your dad a Christmas present if the purpose is to use it to change him. It's pretty rude, and I think that Christmas should be about, or any birthdays, any kind of present, should be...
I was going to say that's clearly what a birthday present is for.
A birthday present, too. The message should be, I love you, and here is a sign of how much I love you and appreciate you. It should not be, I want you to be a different person. It's kind of like buying somebody a weight loss book or a quit smoking book. I mean, yeah, you may be doing it for positive reasons, but the message it sends is kind of counterproductive then.
This is possibly the most Ann Landers question I've ever had to answer, I kind of like it. So what do you have to say?
Well, from a bias standpoint, I'd recommend Cross-Examined, my own novel.
Well done.
But I was thinking books by Dawkins or Carl Sagan might be a good place to go. General science, very approachable, opens the mind.
Yeah. I think if he's into science, a book on science and a book on anthropology isn't necessarily out of the realm of possibility. But what I would do is I would take a middle path, big surprise, I think a gift should be a gift. It should be from the heart. It should be to make the person feel better. It's to have an emotional response, not an intellectual response. And I think you should follow that. But I also think if you really want to have this conversation with your dad, You don't need to wait for the federally mandated moment to buy someone a gift to give them a gift. I'd say just get him a Christmas gift, something that you know he'll enjoy, and then maybe a month later, or even a week later, or on New Year's or something like that, give him the Sagan book, Candle in the Dark. You could get him Demon Hunted World. Science is a Candle in the Dark, right? You could get him any of the books by Dawkins, anything like that, and. Be specific about it. I would like to have a discussion with you about the contents of this book because I find them very compelling. And I think that's a good way to go about it.
I want to put a third voice in there for Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan. It's a good place to start because if your dad is still religious, I'd say skepticism is a good place to start.
Yeah.
Find a common ground. And if he's a guy who likes science, the way you said, he's a certified science teacher, he'd probably enjoy a lot of the stuff in there. Can sometimes a Christian and an atheist can find common ground about claims about Bigfoot or claims about witchcraft or other things like that. And then you can sort of share that common discussion, and that's a good place to maybe later start a conversation
about
God. Have I told
the astrology story about Demon Haunted World and how that was sort of a big moment for me? I don't know. There's the moment in Demon Haunted World where he writes that that horoscope, where Sagan writes that horoscope, and it's the blandest. It's the trope that is in every horoscope you have ever read, ever. It's fantastic. Oh, you're a social butterfly, but sometimes you like your alone time. It's stuff like that. And because Sagan did his research, he knew exactly what to write, right? And so we're amongst my friends, and this is back when I was sort of new agey, and my friend, who was also a skeptic, because I was also a skeptic, but I was also a new agey, it was a weird moment of transition for me. And he read that, and everybody's like, yep, that's me, that's me, that's me. And it's like, I could hear what he, I was listening to what he was saying, and I'm like, oh no, it's coming. No, no. And then he says, yeah, this is from Carl Sagan, Demon Haunted World. This is crap. And astrology is crap. And I've just proved to you that it's crap. Right, and right. I mean, like, well, technically he didn't, but you're right.
James Randi, famous skeptic, actually had a TV show that did that same thing, where he had a classroom of people and handed them all horoscopes based on these exhaustive tests that he made them do ahead of time about where they were born, when, and he handed this and said, okay, this is the result of this astrologer who's just exhaustively torn apart your entire chart and just... This is what he boiled it down to.
Each kid got an envelope with their name on it, right?
Yes. And he handed them out to everyone in the room and then asked them to read it and said, on a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being the most, how much do you think this represents you? Every single hand went up for either 4 or 5.
Right.
And then they asked you to pass it to the person in front of you. And slowly laughter filled the room as they realized they all had the exact same paper.
Right.
So much for astrology. And actually, getting back to Rachel, that idea of approaching it from a skeptical standpoint is a great common ground. Lots of people can find common ground in that. You know, Bigfoot, aliens. Let's talk about this. I mean, it's fun. It's engaging.
Yeah. So, I mean, what other? I mean, clearly, Cross-Examined would be a book that you would suggest, and you would go to what website for that book?
That would be Amazon. Just go to Amazon, look for Cross-Examined, Bob Seidensticker, and there you go.
Awesome. Okay, and what other books might you suggest, I think?
Flim Flam by James Randi is a really good one. It touches on a lot of the same notes. It has extended stories about things like the Cottingley Fairies.
Oh, right.
Which was a scam that even author of Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle, fell for, where these two girls actually scammed an entire country into believing that they had fairies living in the forest behind their house.
Yeah.
They had photos. They had actual photos of them with the fairies.
And it's you know, I mean, nobody had photoshopping skills back then. So if it was a picture, it was entirely believable.
What else could explain this?
Yeah.
Except maybe scissors and a drawing that was cut out. But I mean,
that never happened.
They're little girls. I mean, they're innocent. They couldn't do that.
That was the most confusing part, is several of the fairies appeared, the same exact picture, appeared in multiple photographs that they put out.
Maybe it's like Paris Hilton. She
it was the same fairy.
Pose. Yeah, and it's like, make sure the good side gets photographed type thing.
I like to pose like this.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a weird thing. If we're going with Carl Sagan, I think Contact, the fiction novel he wrote, is actually really good because it
fiction as a way to encourage skepticism. That's great.
Yeah, that's what I try to do. Is I really like the atheism nonfiction books, but I think fiction has a psychological impact that nonfiction doesn't.
On that note, I could recommend one of my favorite movies, Inherit the Wind.
Inherit the Wind is
about
very good.
It's a fictionalized account of the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Yeah,
and I can just say right off the bat that I could totally forget his name. The lead actor in that movie.
Spencer Tracy.
He is a total badass in that movie. And when I am an old man, I want to be Spencer Tracy and Inherit the Wind.
Very good. So as I said before, there is no post show today. Meet us at 2100 24th Avenue South in Seattle. It starts at 5 p.m., goes to 8:30. It's a potluck. All three of us will be there. A lot of your Ask an Atheist favorites, if you happen to have any, are going to be there. Becky is already there. And I'm looking forward to seeing her again.
Come by and say hello.
Yeah, stop by, say hello, have a drink, have some food, and it should be fun. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Olvey. With me today was Mike Gillis and Bob Seidensticker. Dan Lombardo with his Moment of Science. Thank you very much. My production assistant is Darren Garvin. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. Post show again, the Solstice Dinner. Ask an Atheist is an NED Medium production. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.
KLAY.